Welcome to Construction Management 225, Construction Safety. In this class, we're going to learn about how to maintain a safe work environment in construction. As you know, the construction industry suffers from injuries and fatalities, and this affects not only the time and cost of the project, but it also affects the morale and the performance of the personnel working on site. Therefore, in this class, we're going to learn how to maintain a safe work environment to improve the project performance and how to comply with the laws and the rules and regulations established by the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or OSHA. So in this introductory lecture, we're going to talk about what is safety management in general, what are the different steps involved in safety management, and how to develop a safety management plan. So, starting with what is safety management? Safety management is basically a subset of risk management. But because it's functionally so specialized or traditionally unique and important on every construction project, it deserves separate emphasis. How are we going to deal with that risk? Are we going to try to mitigate it? Are we going to insure it? Are we going to bear it? Or are we going to ignore it? These are different methods of dealing with risk. When it comes to safety, definitely we cannot ignore it. So we're going to learn how to mitigate it and deal with it if an accident or an incident occurs. Good safety practice on a construction project can reduce or eliminate accidents and injury to personnel, improve effectiveness of performance, and reduce the total project cost, which is basically what every construction person looks for. Improving the quality, delivering the project on time, in a safe fashion, and within the budget of the project. Because savings can approach 10 times the cost of a successful safety program, contractors and owners have come to adopt effective safety planning and execution as a requirement on construction projects. So again, every contractor, every subcontractor, every supplier, every owner, everyone involved with the construction project looks forward to completing that project safely, and they know that there's got to be some expenditure made to maintain that safe environment, but the return on that investment is going to be high, quite high. So what is safety management again? Safety management includes the processes required to assure that the construction project is executed with appropriate care to prevent accidents that cause or have the potential to cause personal injury or property damage. Accidents and personal injuries and deaths that results and have been and are still a major concern in the construction industry, both in terms of humanitarian losses and the direct and indirect costs to the industry, whether it's going to be in the form of cost expenditure or penalties, whether it's going to be in the form of delays and project suspension, whether it's going to be resulting in a reduction in the reputation of that contractor if they are known as unsafe to work with, and so on and so forth. All of these are side effects of not having a safe work environment. What's the cost of safety management? In the United States alone, construction accidents cost approximately 6.5% of constructed value, and that by itself is about $50 billion every year, a huge amount resulting from these accidents and incidents. Studies have shown that every dollar spent on a good safety program can result in a $4 to $8 reduction in losses from accidents. So we have a return on investment of 400% up to 800%, or even more than that as well. Looking at the elements of safety management, we're going to recognize three primary steps involved in a safety management program. The first one is safety planning. How to plan for safety, because if we do not plan for it, it's not going to occur by itself. And then once we have a good plan, the following step is how to implement and execute that plan to make sure that we are complying with that plan. So safety plan execution is the second step. And finally, the third step is going to be the administration and reporting. We need to produce some reports if we have an accident, or even if we do not have an accident, we have to report on safety as it occurs on our construction sites. So looking at these three steps, we're going to look into each one of them separately, analyze it into its details, and break it down into three main components. What are the inputs that are needed to start that step? What are the tools and techniques that we're going to use to establish that step and execute it? And finally, what are going to be the deliverables or the outputs of each one of these steps? Starting with the first one, here we have the safety planning is a development of the approach to manage the various hazards to safety inherent in the project. The second step, as we mentioned, is the safety plan execution, carrying out the safety plan by performing the activities included therein. And the third step is administration and reporting, which is the maintenance of safety records and reporting safety activities. So let's look at the first one, which is safety planning. Safety planning for a construction project involves a job site analysis of the hazards inherent in the work and making decisions as to the measures to be taken to deal effectively with them. So first of all, we need to recognize what are the hazards to that project. There are going to be some general or generic hazards that are applicable to any construction project. And then there are going to be some specific hazards to this particular type of construction that we have to pay attention to. This analysis includes a survey of the geographical and physical hazards of the site, so the unique aspects, as well as a review of the normal hazards involved in the type of construction anticipated. Government laws and regulations, contract and owner requirements also must be considered in developing the project safety plan, which will be the guiding document for a safe project. OSHA, which is the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, has established the OSHA Act, or the Occupational Safety and Health Act, that shows us what are the different requirements to maintain on a construction site to have a safe work environment, and how to maintain these and how to execute these safety measures. And then some owners would require something that's over and above the safety requirements of OSHA to maintain a super safe site and make sure that we do not have any accidents or incidents. So looking at the first step, which is the safety plan development, we have the inputs, the tools and techniques, and the outputs. Among the inputs, we have the laws and regulations, again, basically state laws, federal laws, district laws sometimes. So these are primarily the OSHA regulations. Contract requirements, which might be something over and above the OSHA regulations. Safety policy, how are we going to maintain these? Site location, the analysis of the job conditions itself, and the management commitment. Top management of the organization has to be fully committed to having a safe work environment, and there's going to be some expenditure associated with that, so they have to show that they're willing to spend that money. The tools and techniques are going to include the hazard analysis, subcontractor selection, how to select contractors who have a good safety track record to maintain a safe site, and incentives. How are we going to compensate, or how are we going to reward the ones who maintain a safe work environment? How is that going to reflect on an incentive plan? For example, if we have 10,000 hours without an accident, how are we going to have, we may have a party, or we may give a bonus or something like that. The outputs are going to include the project safety plan. This is the deliverable. The authority, who is going to be responsible for maintaining it and applying it and enforcing it. And the budget, how much money is going to be allocated to execute that safety plan. So the laws and regulations are the ones regarding safety requirements during construction that must be observed. And this is primarily a very large part of what we're going to be studying this semester. What are the laws and regulations, how to put them in place, and how to monitor them while the project is being built. The contract requirements, say specific owner requirements for safe practice. As we said before, these may be over and above or more stringent than the requirements of OSHA. If OSHA, for example, says you have to maintain this, you have to have fall protection at a certain height, some owners may say, okay, we're going to lower that height to have even more safe work environment. The safety policy, which is the company safety policy that dictates much of the way in which construction activities are carried out. So, for example, the company policy is going to be every visitor to the site has to register their name. They have to have the full proper protective gear, including hard hat, goggles, boots, etc. The site location. The location of the site can have an important bearing on safety. For example, work on or over water often imposes additional safety requirements, not necessarily on dry land. Especially if also if you're going to excavate below the ground water table, now you're working in a wet environment. If you're going to have electrical equipment operating in that location, then we have the added hazard of electrocution. If you're going to work in a deep trench, then we have the hazard of caving in. So again, we're going to look at all the job conditions to try to analyze what are the hazards associated with this type of work. The management commitment is the degree to which a construction company's management is committed to. The tools and techniques include the hazard analysis, which is a systematic review of the construction process for the purpose of identifying all the hazards to personnel or equipment or property involved in the construction, as well as suppliers or general public. Again, you might not only affect people who are working on site, but people who are living close to it or working close to it as well. Subcontractor selection, we have to screen the subcontractors for their safety programs and choose those who have a good record of safety performance. Incentives, effective ways of encouraging the workforce to observe safe work practices is to offer incentives for a safe job. Again, that's going to have a very positive impact on the morale of the personnel when knowing that they are rewarded for observing the safety measures. The outputs are going to be first the project safety plan, which will include recommendations for any specialized equipment that may be required and provide for first aid supplies. The posting of all required notices relating to safety, such as the telephone numbers and addresses of doctors at the nearest hospital, information about reporting safety accidents or reporting hazardous practices on the construction site, reporting these to OSHA, as we're going to see some of the standard posters that have to be posted on site. The authority should also be granted to an experienced individual to act as a project safety officer, who is going to be responsible for maintaining the safety measures on site. And finally, the budget, the estimated cost of the safety plan must be included in the information of the budget for construction of the project. Some owners require that you post that as a percentage of the total project cost, let's say 1% or 1.5%, and they're going to reimburse you for that so that you don't cut corners when it comes to an important issue such as safety. The second step is going to be the safety plan execution. So the execution of the project safety plan involves the application and implementation of the safe construction practices on site in accordance with the requirements of the plan. If you have the best plan ever, but you don't maintain it and you don't execute it properly, then it's totally useless. On a large construction project, there may be a separate safety staff of several persons headed by the safety officer. Now again, looking at the three modules to safety plan execution, inputs, tools and techniques, and outputs. For the inputs, the first input is going to be the project safety plan, which is the output from the previous step, safety planning. And in addition to that, we're going to have the contract requirements as well to make sure that we are complying with the contract as we are executing the project. Tools and techniques are going to include PPE or personnel protective equipment that's going to be issued to everyone that works on site, safety equipment, construction equipment review, just to make sure that our equipment that we're using on site, whether it's a crane, a loader, a tractor, whatever, are safe to operate and properly maintained, safety communication, in case we have any accidents or incidents, how are we going to report these and document them. Training and education, we need to train our personnel. Hopefully, after you complete this course successfully, you're going to obtain the OSHA 30 or the 30-hour card, which is something that's very highly appreciated by owners and acquired almost by everyone working on the construction site. Safety inspection, accident investigation, medical facilities and information about these medical facilities, and drug testing. We should maintain a drug-free construction site. The outputs are going to be reduced injuries if we follow these instructions, lower insurance costs, because again, the lower the injuries, the lower the claims, the lower the payments that we have to pay for the insurance cost. Enhanced reputation, you're going to be recognized as a contractor with a good safety record, and improved productivity. Again, that's going to result from the high morale of people working in a safe environment. So let's look at each one of these. The inputs are going to be the project safety plan, which was described earlier. The contract requirements include any special additional safety procedures and reporting. The tools and techniques include the PPE, which includes something like fall protection harnesses, respirators, especially if you're going to be working in an environment that has gases or fumes or things like that, head and foot gear, a hard hat, proper safety boots, and protective clothing, especially, for example, reflective clothing if you're going to be working in an area that has high traffic. Safety equipment such as trench wall bracing to protect it from caving in, fire protection equipment, whether it's fire extinguishers or anything like that, safety nets to protect against falls, warning devices, and similar equipment. Warning devices, it could be either barricades or cones or even the sirens on the equipment when it's working in reverse to warn everyone behind them that they're working, that they're getting closer to these individuals. Construction equipment review. We're going to again review the condition of the construction equipment and look at the maintenance record of this equipment to make sure that it's working properly. Safety communication. This is a type of communication that can cover a broad range of activities such as barriers, barricades and signs, bulletin boards, initial safety indoctrination meetings, sometimes called the sandbox meeting, the toolbox meetings, or here it is, and individual bulletins on a specific subject. So for example, if we're going to have silica as part of the hazards, then there's a specific bulletin on silica fumes and their risk. If we're going to use any particular chemicals that are flammable or that can cause explosions, for example, we're going to have specific instructions about these different chemicals. Among the tools and techniques also is the training and education, which is closely allied to communication. There may be a need to provide specific training for a specific or special construction activity. So those who are going to be working at an elevation or a higher altitude, they need to be trained on fall protection, for example. Those who are going to deal with electrical work, they need to have specific training on the hazards of electrocution and how to maintain the electrical equipment in a good condition. Safety inspection is going to include daily inspection, which is usually carried out by the safety officer, but others also may periodically inspect the project for its compliance with the safety plan. Representatives from the owner, the insurance company, and government agencies, such as OSHA, for example, have the right to inspect to make sure that you have good safety measures. In case of accidents, then we need to have accident investigation. It's important that each accident be investigated as to cause, and a complete report made of what happened and why, often with pictures, just to make sure that not only we document what happened in this case, but again, to safeguard against its repetition and make sure this issue is not going to happen again. Medical facilities. Arrangements need to be made with a nearby medical facility for medical assistance in the event of an accident beyond the care of the on-site first aid station. We definitely have to have a first aid kit available on-site to treat minor injuries and things like that, but for major injuries, then what would be the closest medical facility that can take care of that injury. Drug testing, a personnel drug testing program is a safety requirement and it's a contractual requirement as well. The outputs of the safety plan execution are going to be, as we mentioned before, reduced injuries. A well-executed safety plan will reduce workers' injuries and raise the morale of the workforce. Lower insurance costs, a lower accident and injury rate will reduce the cost of insurance premiums. We're going to have actually a lecture by the end of this semester to talk about what's called the experience modification rate, or EMR, and how that comes into the calculation of the workers' comp, which is part of the insurance that you pay on your construction site. And an enhanced reputation. Owners are becoming more interested in working with contractors who have good safety records. Owners' exposure is reduced also, because again, the owner himself or herself are going to have to pay less in insurance payments. And workers also want to work with firms that are interested in their safety. So the EMR, as we mentioned just a second ago, is going to be a measure. An owner looking at two contractors who have everything equal, but one of them having an EMR of, let's say, 1.1 versus one who has an EMR of 0.76. The lower the EMR, the better, by the way. The higher the EMR, it shows that you have more accidents. So the owners are going to differentiate based on the EMR. And improve productivity. Accidents results in measured decreases in job site productivity, which also weaken the contractor's profits. The third step and the last step, which is the safety administration and records. So along with governmental laws and regulations that apply to safe construction practice, there are often requirements for record keeping and reporting. Insurance companies also usually require periodic activity and accident reports. And the contract may also require additional records and reports over and above what OSHA and the insurance company requires. That shows the owner's interest in maintaining a safe work environment. Finally, it's a good business practice to keep track of safety performance for use in improving performance and for use in marketing future services. Again, if you put on your brochure, for example, that for the past 100,000 hours of work, we did not have any accidents, that definitely shows that you are a contractor who cares about safety and encourages owners to award projects to this contractor. Looking again at the three ingredients here, the inputs are going to be legal reporting requirements, which are given by OSHA, insurance reporting requirements as part of the insurance policy, contract requirements, and safety plan requirements. So all of these are already established before we start the construction. The tools and techniques are going to include inspection logs and reports, training and meeting records, injury and illness logs, we're going to look at these and the different forms that have to be filled, accident investigations, photographs, and video records. The outputs are going to be the government logs and reports that have to be filed and sent to OSHA, accident reports, achievement of safety incentive goals, if we have established, for example, that we want this project to have zero accidents or zero incidents, and documented safety performance, again, which can be used for reducing your insurance premium and as a promotion tool to get more jobs. The legal reporting requirements, these are requirements for recording and reporting accidents, injuries, and hours worked so that governmental agencies may keep track of safety performance in several workplace categories. The insurance reporting requirements, contractors' insurers require reports of accidents and injuries that they may be responsible to provide for under their policy with the contractor. The contract requirements, certain contract provisions may require that the contractors maintain and report safety-related activities such as accidents and injuries. And the safety plan requirements, the project safety plan may require additional record keeping and reporting of general health data of employees, drug testing results, and other specialized data that may be related to environmental hazards. Looking at the tools and techniques, we have the inspection logs and reports. This type of record is usually the result of safety inspections by the project safety officer and his or her staff, and need to contain comments on the activity observed and any corrections made. That's going to be day by day, so you have to have a good track record of every day of your construction activity. Training and meeting records, Records should be maintained of training given and to whom, meetings held on the subject of safety, who attended, and the date of instruction. Because again, this might be a legal document that might be required in a site investigation in case of an accident. Injury and illness logs. A record should be maintained for all injuries requiring treatment, even if minor. We're going to learn later on what's a recordable injury versus a reportable injury versus a non-recordable or non-reportable injury. An employee illness resulting in absence from work. We're going to learn about these when we talk about records and reports. Accident investigations. All accidents should be investigated and documented completely as to cause and result, damage to property and equipment, and injuries to personnel. As we're going to learn even later on, not only accidents, but even near misses, which is something that could have become an accident, but it did not. We're going to need to document these as well. Photographs and video records, an important part of documentation of accident and safety infraction reporting, are photographs and video records that shows live what took place on site. The outputs are going to be government logs and reports. These are the reports required by governmental agencies, primarily OSHA. Accident reports and achievement of safety incentive goals, a record of to verify that job site personnel have met the safety goals established for an incentive program, and documented safety performance, which is a record to show management, insurance companies, and future clients that that safety goals were met or exceeded. Now, this is a general introduction about what a safety program is. Again, we're going to delve into the details of each one of these different steps. We're going to learn about the different types of hazards and how to mitigate them, how to protect against them, what kind of protective equipment needs to be issued to the different personnel on site, and what kind of reports and records need to be maintained, and what kind of violations and what kind of penalties are going to be applied on those who do not maintain a safe work environment. I hope you enjoy this course. There's going to be a lot of reading. There's going to be a lot of information to be learned. And we're going to follow these in the book that's required for this course, which is the Code of Federal Register 1926, which is basically safety for construction sites. And you can obtain that from our department. You're going to need to purchase that book that is issued by OSHA, and it's updated every other year, or whenever there's a new code or new regulation that needs to be added. I hope you enjoy this class, and I'm going to see you in our next lecture.